This is HPR episode 1941 entitled, What's in My Case, and is part of the series, What's in My Toolkit. It is hosted by Dave Morris, and is about 33 minutes long. The summary is, I'm a fountain pen enthusiast, here's what's in my pen case.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by AnHonestHost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, my name's Dave Morris, and I've got a show today which I'm calling What's in My Case. To be honest, what I'm talking about is pens and stationery and that type of thing, particularly fountain pens. The reason I'm calling it What's in My Case is because I've recently bought a leather pen case from China, which I bought through eBay, and it's where I transport my favourite fountain pens when I do that. So I've been a bit of a enthusiast with regard to pens and stationery and stuff pretty much all my life, I think. I think it must run in families because my son's also an enthusiast of these things, and so is my daughter to a lesser extent. Though she loves writing in journals and notebooks and that sort of stuff, she's always got loads of those. But the pen side of it, my dad also was an enormous enthusiast for all of these things. You could always know what to buy him for his birthday or Christmas, anything pen or pencil or paper related, and he'd be happy. Anyway, I thought I'd share this stuff with you on HPR because I've encountered a number of people throughout my career, and I've worked in IT, so I've met a lot of I don't know how to put it, geeks, I suppose is the way to put it, the people who really enjoy working in the IT field, and so many of them seem to really have an enthusiasm for pens, paper, ink, writing, and that whole thing. I think it probably goes with the outlook, the mindset. So the reason I think I like doing this sort of stuff is, when I was at school around about age 7 or 8, that would have been in the mid-1950s, we were taught to write with ink pens as a transition from using pencils. The school I was at had a supply of dip pens and nibs and ink and blotting paper in order to facilitate this. The pens were quite primitive. They just had a wooden shaft, like a sort of pencil type of thing, with a metal nib holder on the end into which a nib could be inserted. And if you had a broken or damaged nib, you'd just go and get another one. The nib you got was a fairly scratchy thing that needed a fair bit of care to use, otherwise it dug into the paper and made a mess. We each got a sheet of blotting paper to mop up ink spills and to blot the work we'd done so we didn't smudge it. And each desk we had in the school had a hole in it for an inkwell. You'll still see them in sort of antique shops and stuff, I guess. And in it, you fitted, in our case anyway, a white ceramic open-top inkwell. It had a fairly small opening. You could fit the pen in, but it helped to stop the ink evaporating too quickly. A lot of the desks, not all, but a lot, had a sort of brass slider thing that covered over the inkwell to stop it drying out when we weren't doing writing. And the class would always have a designated ink monitor whose job it was to fill these ink wells every week, maybe. I can't remember the frequency, out of a large stone bottle full of ink. It's amazing when you think about it, 7 or 8 year olds splashing around ink with this sort of abandon, but it seemed to work. The colour of the ink we got was always blue-black. I don't know what that was, sort of the regulation colour or something. I have no idea, but that's what it was. We were taught to write using cursive writing, and we followed the teachings of, I think, a Victorian. I've got notes in the show notes. There are links there. And her name was Marion Richardson. Many, many kids of that era would have learnt Marion Richardson writing. I think it taught us good writing habits. Didn't really feel like it at the time, it just felt like another imposition, but I think it did do good things for us. When I got to high school later, it was expected we'd write with a ballpoint pen, which were just coming into fashion, or preferably we'd use a fountain pen. And fountain pens are quite cool in those days. A lot of the kids had them, and there was a lot of comparison and rivalry about what pen you had and who had the better one and that sort of thing. Not so much the writing, but just the pens. I think the ritual of buying or being bought a fountain pen was a sort of rite of passage as you moved on to high school from what in those days was called junior school in England, where I lived. Anyway, I guess all this stuff made me like writing with a fountain pen. And of course, as I said before, my experiences will be shared with many people who are of my sort of age and older, who've been through the UK school system. And speaking to people from other countries, I find quite a lot of Europeans have had similar experiences, perhaps later on in time than I did. So why do people like writing this way? And a lot of them do. I think there's quite a lot I could say here, but I won't go into a huge list of reasons. But just to say briefly that if you use a fountain pen, it can be generally more comfortable to use for longer periods when you're writing things by hand. I know people tend not to write by hand as much these days as they used to. Keyboard skills are regarded as being more important, but there are still times when writing by hand can be good. If you keep a diary, keep a journal, those types of things, write letters to people. There are many nib styles, so you can find one that suits your writing and can be enjoyable to use. It can take a little while to find exactly the one that you want, admittedly, but once you have, you can have a pen which you really enjoy using, which will last you your life. And using a fountain pen can generally be more economical. There can be a higher cost to start up with when you buy the pen and get the one with the right nib. Maybe you've tried a few along the way. Inks, it cost a bit, although you can get some quite good value ones. But the point is that you don't have to throw the pen away and buy another one. You can just refill it from your bottle of ink. And a bottle of ink can last years and years and years. I recently finished one from school, and that must be a good 40 years that bottle has been around. Nowadays, there's also a novelty value in using one. It's also becoming a bit more cool, I think, in some respects, and it gives a certain air of gravitas to if you sign something with a fountain pen, or if you use one in a meeting or something like that. I'm not sure that's a big plus. But anyway, there is very much resurgence of the interest in fountain pens, and I've pointed to various links in my notes supporting that. There's a bit of terminology around fountain pens that you might not be aware of. First of all, a fountain pen is a pen with a nib through which liquid ink flows, and it's got an ink reservoir. That differentiates it from the sort of dip pens that I was talking about earlier. The reservoir is usually refillable, although there are some disposable pens you just use up the ink inside them and chuck it. The nib is the writing part, as you doubtless gather, and it's usually metal, though I have had plastic ones in the past. Not very good, but have used them. And they have different tip sizes, varying from extra fine to broad, and there's a variety of shapes, very wide variety actually, but we'll not go into a lot of detail there. The pen nib is a piece of metal, usually with a small blob on the end, which actually comes in contact with the paper, and it's usually divided into two. There's a split down the middle, sometimes with a breather hole in it, and the split makes the two halves move in relation to one another as you press down on the pen, and it also helps the ink to flow down to the tip of the nib. These two pieces that you find are called the tines, T-I-N-E. I won't go through this whole list. There's a list here for you to refer to. If there's anything in particular that I mention, I'll try and refer back to the list. So I thought what I'd do is just go through my pen collection. Now, I'm not a heavy collector of these things. I have very few. I have about 19 usable pens at the moment, and I use maybe six on a regular basis. So I'll just talk about my top six. My style of writing seems to suit a fine nib, so I have a fairly small handwriting. So I've tended to buy nibs classed as fine or extra fine. The pens which originate in Japan tend to have finer nibs than European pens, so one marked as medium from a Japanese manufacturer is similar to a European fine. So going through the list of pens then, my first one, and these are sort of ranked in order of preference, I guess. So my top, number one, should have done a countdown, shouldn't I? Never mind. You probably don't care either way. Anyway, it's a Pelikan. Pelikan, I think, is the way you'd pronounce it, because it's a German pen. The one I have is a classic range M215 with a sort of diamond or rhombus pattern on the side. And that was given to me by my son for Christmas 2012. So what I've done in each of these cases is there are three pictures of the pen. There's one with the pen just with its cap on, so you can get a general idea of it. There's the same pen with the cap removed, so you can see it, the sort of general structure uncapped. And then I do a close-up of the nib, so you can get an idea of that. And I finish with an example of what the writing looks like. Obviously it's my handwriting, so it's nothing generic, but just to give you some idea of how it looks when you write with a pen like this. So the one I've got is an extra fine nib. It writes really beautifully and smoothly. Ink flow is great. That's one of the features of a fountain pen. Cheaper ones tend to skip. The ink flow is not so good. Sometimes you can resolve that. You can clean them out and work on the nib, do things to the nib to make the flow better. The pen, this Pelikan, has a metal body and cap, so it's quite strong. The clip, this is the characteristic of this brand of pen, has a sort of look of a pelican with a pelican's bill, if you look at it very carefully. It's fairly small, it's not a big pen. It's operated with a piston. Now, my terminology list explained a little bit about what pistons are, but basically it's a knob at the end of the barrel that you turn, and it moves a small piston up and down the inside of the barrel, which will suck up ink or push it out if that's what you want to do. But in this particular case, it's integrated into the pen. You can't see the piston mechanism, but there is a small viewing window in the barrel, and you can see how much ink is currently in the pen. So this is quite a large German company, Pelikan, which makes a number of pens which vary quite a lot in terms of price. This is an example of a manufacturer that does produce some pretty expensive pens right at the top of their range. So it's not a type of pen I'm going to buy many more of unless I get very rich, which seems pretty unlikely. So my number two example is from a company, TWSBI, that everybody pronounces Twisby, and it's the Eco model. Twisby is a Taiwanese company, and the letters stand for something that I'm not really sure about, because I've seen various explanations of it and I'm not sure which one is right. Anyway, the Eco is a new model which I bought for myself July this year, 2015, and it's the lowest price one in their range, but it's quite nice. You can see from the pictures that it's a transparent pen with a non-transparent cap. It's a type of pen called a demonstrator, which is a thing explained in my list of terminology. I bought the extra fine nib for this, and it's just really nice. It's a piston action pen, and the piston is operated by a knob at the end of the barrel as usual, and it's made of acrylic resin. And this particular one is remarkable in as much that it can be completely disassembled and maintained by itself. It actually comes with, in a box, with a little plastic spanner which lets you undo the parts of the pen. There's even instructions on how to do it, and it's also got a small jar of silicon grease which you can put onto the piston to help it to move, because pistons can get a bit jammed up over time. It writes really, really well. It's very fine nib. It's very good. There's a slight scratchiness to the nib, but it's hard to get away from that with a very, very fine nib. It's a really nice pen to use. So my next one is from an American company called Noodlers. They actually primarily make ink, but they make a range of pens as well. I've got two of these Noodlers pens, but the one I'm talking about here is the one I like the best. It's a fairly cheap pen. I should have said that the Twisby was not all that expensive, around £40 I think it was. The Noodlers pen that I'm talking about is called the Conrad model, and the colour is a fairly dark blue, which has got the name, and sometimes the names are a little bit fancy, Hudson Bay Fathom, they call it. It's a resin material, which is different from many others. It's not acrylic. It's got an odd smell to it, but that seems to be a selling feature, actually. But there are full acrylic pens in the Conrad range, but they're about twice the price of this one, and this was about £17 when I bought it. It's a medium fine nib, and it's unusual in the split between the two tines. There's no breather hole in it, and the split extends the entire length of the nib, which allows the nib to bend more when you write with it. It's called a flex nib. That means that the width of the lines it produces varies with the amount of pressure that you apply, and people like to use this for doing calligraphic effects, doing copperplate handwriting and that type of thing. I don't do that myself, but I find it a very smooth and pleasant nib to use. Piston filler, but in this case you have to undo a little cap at the end to reveal a knurled knob that operates the piston. And it's a transparent pen, I didn't say that. Hopefully you can see that from the pictures. And my writing sample is using, the other ones have used a black ink, which I quite like, but in this one I've put a blue ink, and it's you can see an example of its use. So the Noodlers Ink Company is based in the USA and is slightly idiosyncratic and quite a fun company, I think. The pen boxes, just little cardboard boxes, come with pictures drawn on them from an original that was done by the owner of the company, I think. And particularly the inks are a good value. The next one is called the Reform 1745. Now, this was another birthday present from my son in 2012. The other one was a Christmas present. It's a small pen, and I assume the nib is a fine one, but there's no indication. It doesn't come with any documentation or anything, but I'll come to that in a minute. It's a piston filler with a knob on the end, as you can see in the pictures. There's also an ink viewing window in the barrel. It's green, darkish green and black, with a couple of copper coloured pieces on it, the clip and a ring at the bottom of the cap. And it's got a two-tone nib, which is nice. Now, that particular one tends to gush ink rather a lot. You can see from the writing that there's quite a lot of ink on the deposited on the paper, which is, you know, it's good and bad. It's it'll get less so as you use it. It's only recently been filled, this one, I think. Now, the interesting story about these things is the colours are actually the colours of the city of Berlin. They were originally manufactured in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, and they became particularly popular with school children. Some stories say that they were made for school children. I'm not clear whether that is the case. They were at one time in that sort of era reported to be the best-selling pens in the world, and manufacturing continued into the 1970s. There's stories of Nazi officers being captured during the Second World War having these in their pockets, and they were taken prisoner, and the pens being well known and respected as a consequence of people finding them. I don't know how much of that is true. It's hard to find a good definitive story on this. Anyway, the pens were made in vast numbers, I think, and they're still available. They're called old new stock, which I thought was a very strange thing until I realised what they mean is it's an old pen that's never been used, and it's just as it was manufactured. And you can still buy them. And the problem with them is that, I don't know whether time or maybe a little bit of misuse along the way, or maybe the manufacturing process means that the quality can be a little bit variable. My son actually bought 12 of these things in a job lot from eBay, and he went to the trouble of fixing this particular one so it worked better. And since then, I've bought a couple myself. They cost around £12 each on eBay. You have to be quite selective, though. Some people will charge you a lot for them. And I've learned a bit about how to tune the nib so that it's not scratchy and delivers the ink properly. So they can be quite good to have. They're a really nice first-use pen, but you have to be careful of this thing. So my next one is the Pilot MR. I bought this from Amazon July this year, 2015, just because I'd heard about it and thought it would be nice to give it a try. I'd heard a lot of comments from people on the internet, and also there was a discussion about this on GNU Social that I frequent from time to time. It's in Europe it's called the MR, but in the USA it's called a Metropolitan, and is well regarded as a good value first time pen. The one I've got is all black with a sort of slightly shiny bit around the middle of it. I think it's all metal. I think it's mostly metal anyway. The barrel and the cap are metal. It's got a medium nib, but it's a Japanese pen, so it means it's actually quite fine. It's a cartridge pen, this particular one. It takes Pilot branded cartridges, but it also takes international size cartridges. There's a converter that supposedly works with it. I've not tried it. I've written down details of what it's called. And I also have a Waterman's pen, which I won't talk about here, but I've got some ink cartridges for it, and I tried one of those in the pen. It's much longer than the international size one, so it's a good capacity, and it works absolutely fantastic. So my writing sample is with the black ink. Waterman Intense Black is the name of the ink. It's a really nice pen. It's a really good writer, smooth, pleasant to use, and it's around £15 in the UK. I'm told that it's similar sort of price in dollars in the States. So it's a fantastic pen for very little money. The Pilot Corporation is a Japanese pen manufacturer, and they make quite a range of pens, some of which are pretty expensive. This is right at the bottom of their range, but it's still an excellent pen. So my last one is from a French company. I bought this in August 2015, and the company is called, it looks like J. Herbin, but it's pronounced in a French way, J. Herbin, and they're mostly known for their inks. but they'd started this year selling a fountain pen and a ballpoint pen. The ballpoint pen is refillable with fountain pen ink, which is interesting. So I bought the ballpoint for my daughter, because she likes to use that sort of pen, and to see if she liked it. She didn't. But my son was very keen, so he's got it now. But I kept the fountain pen for myself. It's a transparent, imagine, polycarbonate type of thing. It's only small. It's about 4 inches, the barrel and to the nib is 4 inches. So without the cap, you have to put the cap on the end, which is called posting. I've mentioned that in my terminology. You have to do that to make it a reasonable size. It has a fine nib, and it's, as I said, a transparent pen. It cost only £8, and the rollerball was £5. It takes international size cartridges. There's two sizes in the international range, small and large, and it takes the small ones because it's so tiny. But I have found a converter for it, though I haven't used it yet. And the converter is made by Monteverde, and it's called a mini ink converter, just in case this interests you and you want to follow it through. The pen is really nice to use, and it writes well. I bought some Jaoban ink cartridges to use with it and tried out a reddish colour, which again has a French name, as you might imagine, Terre de Feu, which I think means fire earth. I think it's meant to be sort of terracotta, actually. So it's like a sort of fireplace or something. I don't know. That's just me guessing. So Jaoban is quite a well-known, an old company, so it's interesting. They made more pens I'd be interested in trying them out. It writes really nicely. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, I've got a case for my pens. I bought it on eBay. It's nothing very much, actually, but it's okay. It'll take 12 pens in total, and I have been known to carry them around, several of them around in this thing, but it's not a thing I do often. Mostly when I meet friends who are also into fountain pens, and we can compare notes. So what did you buy recently? Oh, I got one of these. Oh, that's amazing. I should get one of those types of meetings. I told you I'm a geek. I'd like to find something better for storing pens in, a wooden box or something like that. But at least having a case let me join the What's in My Toolkit series. I wondered if you yourself might be interested in becoming a fountain pen user. It's something at least it's worth having a try at, just to see how you get on with it. So if you're interested, I've listed a few pens that you might want to buy to experiment with. And the first one is from Pilot, and it's called the V-Pen or the V4. I think it might vary depending on where you buy it. It's a Japanese pen, again. It's a disposable pen. It's got a medium-sized steel nib, and it's available in multiple colours. It has a large ink capacity. It will run quite a long time. In the UK, it costs around £4. In the United States, I'm told, and possibly other countries, it's known as the Varsity. And I have one of these, and I really like it. It's a lovely pen. You can tell it's not high quality, but it's great for... It's a good writer, and it always writes, and it's very reliable. And it's a good thing to have. I have a red one, which I use for marking up things or highlighting stuff. The other one similar to this is from a company called Platinum, another Japanese company, and it's called the Preppy. This is a clear polycarbonate pen. The Pilot one was not completely clear. It's refillable, this one, with a proprietary cartridge, and there are several pen colours and ink colours available. There is an adapter, I'm told, I've not tried this myself, to allow it to use international small cartridges. And there's also 3 nib sizes, medium, fine, and extra fine. In the UK, this pen costs around £3, but I've not actually bought one of these to try it, so I can't comment on it myself. But it's well spoken of, and if you're interested, it's probably a good starter pen to just try out. And then there's the Jaoban transparent fountain pen that I've just mentioned, which is around £8. And then there's the Pilot MR or Metropolitan, again, which I've discussed already, and that's around $15 in the US. So there's four pens that you might want to try out just to see whether you enjoy writing with a fountain pen. Now, the other factors that I haven't mentioned much about, is this recording could go on far too long if I did, is the joint subjects of paper and ink. So I've made some references to paper and ink in relation to writing and fountain pens. There are some good articles on Wikipedia. Getting the right sort of paper, good quality for using with a fountain pen, it's important because it allows the pen to write smoothly, and also it mustn't be too absorbent, otherwise the ink will sink into the paper and make a sort of fuzzy mess as it soaks into the fibres, which is referred to as feathering. And if you've got good quality paper, then you can write on both sides of it. So if you're writing notes or something, you're keeping a journal or a diary, then you don't want to turn the page after writing on it and find that you can read what was on the other side from the back. So what I tend to go for an 80 GSM paper. GSM is a term from the paper world, grams per square meter. So it's a measure of the paper density. That's not the entire parameter list for what makes up good paper, because some printer papers and copier papers can be 80 GSM and yet they tend to be very absorbent. So you need to look around for good quality writing paper. I've actually found, this is a UK thing probably, there's a range called Oxford which sells books and writing pads and refills for ring binders, and some of their papers in their academic range are excellent for using with a fountain pen. I could go into a lot more detail here, but I won't unless you ask me to. But for now I'll stop. So just to finish off with speaking about inks. Now there's a huge number of these things with a vast range of colours, and it's quite important to choose inks made for fountain pens, because there are others which are made for dip pens and maybe drawing pens and that type of thing, that if you put into a fountain pen will clog it, because they tend to dry out or they contain materials that will damage the inside of the pen. A good basic ink made by a pen or ink company such as Parker or Waterman, it's a good choice to use to start things off. If you have access to the Noodler's ink range, then those are also very good value. There's a very large market in fountain pen inks. Some of them can be remarkably expensive. A big bottle, especially a fancy glass bottle, can cost you as much as a good quality pen, which seems daft to me. I'm not buying those. I have discovered recently that some of the sellers in the UK, there's a brand in the UK called Diamine, which is a good quality ink that's not massively expensive. They sell a small sample bottle which you can buy just to sample inks, you know, so you'll get maybe years worth of use out of such a small bottle. I forget the size of them, but you can sometimes get these, and then you can decide on a colour that you like and then buy more of it in the larger bottles perhaps, which is a better value. So it's another large subject that I'll leave for now. So I hope that wasn't too geeky for you and you found it interesting. So that's it. Bye now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.